What if you were born with a disease that you always knew would kill you? And then what if all of a sudden you were given a second chance? Well, that's exactly what happened to me. And it's the question that we explore on the new podcast series, Breathless, from Snack Labs. Join me, Jeremy Saunders, for a series that explores what it means to live and die, to love and to lose, and what it's like to have your whole life turned upside down and the unexpected challenges that come with a life-saving drug. You can listen to Breathless now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello.
Hey, baby.
Ready for another, we're back.
We're back
with another episode. We took a little summer break,
hiatus. Call that a hiatus.
Yep, hiatus.
Thank you so much for your patience and your understanding.
Yeah.
And hope you all had such a beautiful summer.
Yeah, it's over.
Yeah, it's like September 21st as of the release of this episode. And I believe that officially marks the end of the summer season. I think September 21, we officially transition into fall.
So it is over.
So it's over.
So I can say that without people hating me.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
I've been saying that over the last week and I get a lot of people really just like aren't down.
Well, people start saying, how was your summer in the middle of August? And that's the real problem.
I mean, that's dumb.
Yeah, for those of you who don't live in Canada, we get 8 weeks of summer, and to just disclude the last two weeks of August is just...
It is wild, though, how quickly it transitions. Like, we just had the hottest summer, I think, ever.
Yeah.
I mean, which makes sense. The planet is burning.
Yeah.
But then it just, like, switched.
Yeah, September, everyone's going back to school.
Leaves are falling. Donut's stoked. He loves leaves.
He loves leaves. That's so cute.
And now it's time to get spooky.
Yes, your favorite season.
I love it. I got a sick Halloween costume already.
Do you have 30 days of horror movies lined up that you've never seen before?
I do this every year. I watch one horror movie a day for 31 days in October. And I don't always do it with movies I haven't seen. I rewatch a lot.
Yeah.
But I do have my list. I'm working on it. It's almost done.
Any brand new? Have you heard of a horror movie called Barbarian? Someone was just telling me
about
that
today. Fucking unreal.
Was it?
Holy, yo, if you're listening to this right now and you like horror movies, go to your theater. It's playing right now. It's called Barbarian. Do not look anything up. Don't even watch the trailer. It doesn't matter if you watch the trailer because you're going to watch the trailer and go, oh, I know what this is about. And then you're going to watch the movie and go, well, didn't see that coming.
Amazing.
It is truly scary. I screamed. I yelled.
Kira was like, oh my God, that was the first time I've ever heard you like actually react in a horror movie.
Did Kira have her eyes closed the whole time? Did she also like
horror movies? No, she loves horror movies. She did better than me. She was less scared than I was. I was fucking scared. And man, that movie is wild. Like it is, every once in a while, a horror movie will come along where I'm just like, just totally, totally shocked by how effective it was. Uh-huh. And this movie did that in spades. Like it was so good.
Do you think I'll like it?
Yes.
Is it gory?
Not a little bit, but not like crazy. No.
Does anyone's head get taken off shockingly and unexpectedly? Already a very stressful moment.
No, there's no decapitation, but there is some head trauma. Some head trauma.
Okay.
I don't want to say anything else. Honestly, like the less you know, the better. It is an unexpected ride, that movie. Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah, definitely worth going to see. And my Halloween costume this year, I went all out. This is the first time in fucking years where I've been like, fuck it. I'm just gonna like spend a bunch of money on a sick outfit.
Go fuck yourself. Yeah. You have literally spent one-off, amazingly expensive and amazing contact lenses that you've swear.
But what I mean, it's been
in
years.
The mirror
it's been years.
Two hours
since,
trying to get
it's
in.
Been years since I've done that. It's been a while.
Is he chewing my boot?
No, I think he's chewing a cord. Don't chew anything. Anyway, I'm going out as Pinhead from Hellraiser, and it's like crazy bondage kind of shit. It's sick.
Yeah, it's really intense. Looking.
It's intense. Yeah, it's
great. Do you already know what you're doing for Halloween?
No. Okay. I on the day before, I'm going to a screening, a double feature movie screening outside. So I'll wear it for that.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
This is not a terrifying, as someone who's been exclusively listening to true crime podcasts, it's not at all a terrifying time to just go out and completely unrecognizable as any human being. Like just
new Halloween's coming out, the final iteration in this current trilogy.
No way.
Excited for that. That's gonna be really fun. Man, we're in like a horror renaissance right now. It's sick. It's a great time to be a horror
fan. Do you think it's like so the true crime podcast I listen to, My Favorite Murder, they really talk about their fascination of true crime coming from a place of severe anxiety and just needing to know all the possible things that could happen and sort of being a little bit neurotic about, you know, locking your doors and they have this whole slogan of fuck politeness. Like, no, if someone's walking towards you wanting to talk to you, you don't know that
at
you
night?
Just,
oh, yeah, for sure.
Never.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Not worth
it. Do you think that the horror renaissance comes from this extremely dark time that we've been living in the last couple of years where people are like, I need something worse than this to take away my pain?
No, I don't think it. I don't think it has to do with that. Although there was that study that came out soon after COVID, and it was saying that people that were horror fans were more prepped and managing the pandemic better than people who weren't.
No way. I didn't read that study.
Yeah. Yeah. But no, I don't think that. Like, I don't think this. I don't think COVID has to do with it. I think it's more so just like a respect. You know, there's a number of like horror movies that have come out in the last couple of years that are a little bit more cerebral. You know, kind of smart. And I think there's like just there's more of a respect for the genre now in like Hollywood. And they're seeing that there's like actually quite a bit of like, you know, quite a bit of money that can be made when something's good.
Right.
And honestly, the movie that I think I have nothing to base this off of, but the movie that I think maybe kind of set those wheels in motion early on was Cabin in the Woods.
Oh, interesting.
This movie that just like takes the genre, flips it on its head. It's a total satire, yet like also effective. And it just like it encompasses like every horror genre, every horror franchise you've seen in the last, you know, three decades.
You were there when I auditioned for that movie.
Yes, I know. I remember. But, you know, it's like back in the day, horror was awesome. You know, when you look at like things like The Exorcist, I mean, if you haven't watched The Exorcist since you were, whatever, 12, and you watch it now, you go, oh my goodness, this
oh,
is
shit.
Extraordinarily good cinema. Like, it is a beautiful film. And like Rosemary's Baby and like Carrie, like these movies that are actually like really well done, really thoughtful.
Terrifying.
Very smart, very terrifying. Alien, another good one. And then I don't know what happened, but like, and this would be a fun podcast to listen to, is like the history of horror, but like horror sort of like got cheap, and there was like a good period of time there where it was very like schlock and very...
Throw some titles that fit into that category.
Like
you like Halloween, that came out of that time, but this is not the same caliber necessarily as...
Well,
Carrie.
I mean, well, you got like all of the iterations of Halloween, which are like shit. You know, there's a bunch of really bad iterations of Halloween. And just like poor quality, just like shitty kind of horror. Like there wasn't a lot of money being pumped into horror. Mm. But then you got people coming around like Ari Aster and like Robert Eggers doing things like The Lighthouse or Midsommar or Hereditary. And like those movies are, you know, like surprised that we didn't see
cinematic.
Like Toni Collette up for an Oscar for her performance in the Hereditary, you know?
Yeah.
So now, anyway, we're in this like renaissance where like just there's so, and with like Shudder financing a bunch of movies, like there's just so many good options for horror lovers, and I fucking love it. Oh, there's a new Hellraiser series coming out in like in a week or two.
That's why the costume was there, because I'm sure that's not like a regularly stocked full costume.
Well, it wasn't a full costume. I just found the mask, and then I bought a bunch of other costumes to put this costume together.
Okay, copy.
Yeah, which is why it was far too much money.
Oh, I see.
I had to buy 3 costumes.
Yeah, you should have just gone with something slutty.
Could have, yeah. There was a lot. There was a lot of slutty.
The Halloween store, which I just love that it springs up here.
So good.
Like, what is it? You know, middle of September, they're like, let's start selling costumes to people. And it's right around the corner from my school. So maybe I'll go check it out next week.
But yeah, so I love the summer year. I love sweater weather. Love winter sweater. And honestly, like summer is great, but bring on fall. I'm all about it. I love fall.
Yeah, but only until winter, and then bring on spring, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, we hope you're also really looking forward to Halloween, or that you have something exciting in your future that you're looking forward to. Mm-hmm. So we all know how important that is for our overall mental well-being and health.
Yeah.
As our routines and rituals, hopefully you've got some of the good stuff going on in your life as well. Jeremy and I have been recording a handful of episodes now over the last few weeks that we've been on our hiatus, and we've got some more in the pipeline, more conversations scheduled over the next few weeks. And we're really excited about the content that we have lined up for you so far.
Yeah, very much so.
And I guess we'll should we just jump right in and introduce this week's guest?
Yeah.
Okay, sweet. So we spoke, for this week's episode, we spoke with Jessica Esfandieri. Am I pronouncing that right? I think so.
Yes, I think so.
She, Jessica
Esfandieri.
Esfandieri. Jessica is the host of Open Late podcast. And obviously we were intrigued to speak with Jessica because she has a 9-year relationship marriage that has been, or longer than that relationship / marriage, but that's been open or polyamorous for the last 9 years. And it's been through many iterations of its openness. And Jessica has only really been open about her openness for the last couple of years, I think, to her friends and family.
Yeah.
We really enjoyed speaking with her because she talks with other people that are very in line with the guests, kinds of guests that we have on our show too, about sex and relationships in general, but with that specific polyamorous lens. And you should go check out her podcast and her guests and her conversations. She's got a quiz on her website called... Wait, what's the quiz called? It's called What's Your Relationship Type? I think it's called Your Relationship Style.
Okay, yeah.
And I thought we could go through it together. It only really makes sense if one of us answers the questions, I suppose. So I've got it up here. Shall I read it to you and you can?
Yeah.
Yeah? Okay. So you also can take this quiz and we'll make sure you have a link to it in the show notes. But the whole aim of this quiz is to kind of give you some food for thought, to think about the way that you like to love and express love and date and et cetera. So let's get right into it. Question number one. You would describe your dating history as A, you've never seen the point in labeling the people you connect with, since traditional dating to marry and to have a family isn't your plan. B, you've been able to have feelings for more than one person at once. C, usually dating with the intention to be with one person. Occasionally, when you're not exclusive, you will hook up with others. D, one at a time for considerable stretches of time. Or E, dating a few people at once. However, once you fall for someone, you'll switch gears and focus on your emotional relationship with them.
I'm going to go with the last one there.
Yeah, that sounds right.
E? Cool. What is that? E?
Yeah.
E.
Okay, number two. When you're not in a relationship and dating, you will usually A, date with no intention of settling down with one person. B, date one person at a time with the intention to find someone to build your life with. C, date a few people at once where feelings may or may not arise. D, date multiple people and allow yourself to have feelings for anyone you have chemistry with. Or E, date people you feel like you could have a future with.
I think C.
Date a few people at once where feelings may or may not arise.
Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, that's like... Everything has changed so much over the last 5 years, but that's kind of, I mean, that's sort of what I like,
when
how
you're
I
not
would
appro- in a what,
yeah, how I'd approach it and not in a relationship.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's move on. Number three, you've found someone you're interested in dating, but you're worried about committing. A, I just feel like this is way
so
over
far.
Your head.
Yeah. I'm like, this is so outside the realm of anything I ever knew.
Okay. But you're worried about committing. Okay. A, you have a conversation about wanting to continue to be exclusive emotionally, but you still want to be open sexually. B, you will commit and see how it goes until the spark wears off. C, you won't even consider committing to someone who is not open to the idea of being open. D, you're upfront that you think monogamy might not be for you and you are interested in building something different. Or E, you hold off committing until you have a conversation about your fears.
What was B?
B was you will commit and see how it goes until the spark wears off.
Yeah, probably that.
Yeah, okay.
But again, I'm full on just like lesbian, like you hauler.
Yeah, right.
Like I just... Two weeks in, I'm like, move in.
Yeah, that sounds right. Okay, question four. When you met your person, or consider what it's like meeting your person, you feel A, excited you found them, mildly bummed that you will be off the market entirely if you choose to commit. B, it should be only one person. They are it for you. C, excited and also aware that you have many opportunities to meet your people in life. You love the idea of sharing love with multiple people. D, excited about it, also hoping they're as sexually adventurous as you are and open to all possibilities. And E, there isn't really one person for you. You don't see the value in committing to just one. You want to make sure your relationships are equal across the board.
I think D.
This is a hard one.
Yeah, that is a hard one.
Yeah.
But I think D.
Excited about it, also hoping they're as sexually adventurous as you and open to all possibilities.
Yeah.
Number five, when you're having sex, your imagination will run to, and you're going to choose the thing that will most align with your connection style.
Okay.
A, you and your partner having the hottest vacation sex in a beach bungalow at sunset.
Wait, this is where my mind goes to while I'm making fuck?
Yeah, while you're having sex, your imagination will run to.
All right.
B, someone sees you. And your partner getting it on a beach in a beach bungalow, and you invite the beautiful stranger to join.
Okay.
C, the friends you have been chatting with flew in to meet you on this vacation, and you all hook up in the beach bungalow.
Okay.
D, after an incredibly sexy beach bungalow experience, you phone your partner at home to say goodnight, and you love them. Or E, after an incredible bungalow experience, you part ways with this amazing partner, not sure when you'll see them again, and grateful for such a beautiful experience.
Well, I can honestly say my mind's never gone to any of these. What was A?
You and your partner.
Oh, get you. Someone sees you banging.
That's B. Someone sees you banging.
Oh,
and
you call
them
in. What was A?
Just you and your partner having the hottest vacation sex in the beach bungalow at sunset.
Yeah, that.
Oh.
Yeah.
So romantic. Number six, you're dating someone for 3 years and in love. A, you're content with this partnership, no intention to marry, and your partner is aware that you are open to other relationships. B, you sometimes wish you could, or you already do have the occasional threesome with your boo, or maybe a hall pass. C, you wish you could, or you do openly connect sexually with others. D, you couldn't imagine ever being with anyone else. Or E, you could imagine yourself or have already experienced you and or your partner falling in love with other people and it not taking away from the love between you two. 3 years. 3 years and in love.
I mean, as it stands right now, probably, realistically, probably D. But also I could see E.
Right.
Being a thing. I'm kind of easy with either.
Okay.
You know?
I'll just go with D.
But D is pretty, it's pretty much D.
Like, that's where you're at right now.
Yeah, I'm at, right now where I'm at is like monogamy.
You're at less than 1 year, but imagining you're going to feel this way still.
Yeah.
Copy that. Yeah. Okay, question seven. When you're out with your partner, A, you don't even notice other people. B, you will notice if someone else is attractive objectively. C, you will notice if you're attracted to others and possibly fantasize about them, maybe with you and your partner. D, you see potential connections with many people when you're out with your partner. E, you might end up connecting with someone else. There isn't a hierarchy in any of your relationships.
Currently, I'm going to go with B on this one.
Yeah, okay. You'll notice if someone's attractive objectively.
Yeah.
Number eight, what is your view on marriage or long-term partnership for yourself? A, marriage is a partnership for life. Even one person or both have a fling, threesome, or hall pass here or there. It doesn't mean that the marriage should end. In fact, it can enhance it. B, marriage is for two people, a commitment with the goal to last a lifetime. C, marriages come in all shapes and sizes. Depending on the marriage agreement, some couples can choose to get their needs and desires met with other people. D, marriage and partnership looks different for everyone. The two-person-only partnership is really limited and doesn't make sense for the way many want to live their lives. E, marriage is really a political, socioeconomic construct that was created by things like organized religious interests, etc., and you don't really subscribe to that.
That one.
That one, too, yeah. Nine, in a relationship or your ideal future relationship, you feel like your partner can, A, meet most of your needs, except steamy, sexy desires that you might still have down the line. And in that case, you can make one-off exceptions. B, meet all your needs easily. C, allow you to be exactly as you are at all times, whether that's with them or someone else, you come first to you. Or D, show up as the best version of themselves and still not be able to meet all your needs.
Sorry, what's the question here is?
In a relationship or your ideal future relationship, you feel like your partner can.
Okay, and read the D again.
Show up as the best version of themselves and still not be able to meet all of your needs.
Yeah, that one. Yeah.
That makes sense. We're getting close. Number 10, you're in a committed relationship. If you imagine your partner being with someone else intimately, what do you feel? A, you feel like that's something you might want in your life or already have. It's a mixture of emotions, but that doesn't stop you from thinking about it. B, you feel excitement and happiness that they can be fulfilled and experience pleasure with someone else. It would be worth any uncomfortable emotions. C, you'd never be in a committed relationship that didn't allow for other relationships. Humans should be free to be with who they want, when they want. D, a mix of curiosity, excitement, jealousy, and some other emotions. You're not sure, but you're not closed off to it. E, dread or confusion. That's not something you ever want to consider.
D.
Number 11.
How many questions are there?
I don't know. I can't tell, but it's like there's a status bar.
Yeah.
I've got like
75%
probably like two or three more questions.
Cool. Okay. All right.
Okay. When you were in high school, you often, A, thought people should be free to move through relationships, experiencing love and connection and not have attachments. B, had one crush at a time. C, had one crush at a time, but pondered others. D, able to hold multiple relationships at once.
This is when?
In high school.
Okay.
Or E, easily had multiple crushes at a time without, even while dating someone.
Yeah, that.
That, yeah.
I mean, I was just crushing every.
I crushed on everyone too.
Everyone, yeah.
Like I had lists of people in my journal on any given day.
Every day I had a new crush.
Oh my God. Like that person who just walked by that you'll never see again.
Yeah.
In love. Number 12. When you think of being in a relationship with multiple people at once, you feel A, you love the idea, especially in pockets of time, new relationship energy is the best. B, you feel like you would want to be with one person only for an emotional commitment, but occasionally being with others sexually could be fun. C, you're up for the adventure because it could bring so much fun, love, and spice into your life. D, easy. You love the idea of being free to be with whoever you want, whenever you want. E, exhausted, jealous, and really uncomfortable.
B.
When in a relationship or considering your romantic life, sorry, when in a relationship or considering your ideal romantic life, A, you have multiple loves and your partner is able to as well. You might have challenges in these relationships, but ultimately it adds more love to your life. B, know that you two are meant for each other and committed to one another. An occasional sexual fling excites you and is welcome. It won't change that life plan. C, plan for a life together. However, the idea of being with others romantically or connecting emotionally is on the table for you. D, you love having meaningful connections with others without having any attachments that are leading to a primary partnership or marriage. Or E, committed to one partner and feel like there is no one else out there for you. They are your one and only.
I mean, the way I feel about it now is E.
Yeah.
Pretty like committed.
Yeah.
But again, like that was different not long ago.
Yeah.
You know? So, but as it stands right now, E.
Let's go with E.
Yep.
Oh, that was the last question.
Cool. Now, does it tell me how much of a freak I am?
No, it just says an open relationship is best for you. This is what it says. An open relationship is where you're able to engage in intimate and sexual relationships with multiple people at once. Mm-hmm. These are unique to each partnership. They can include having a threesome, swinging, or separately dating other people without your partner present. If you're getting this as a result, know that you possibly have some tendencies towards monogamish,
yeah,
and possibly some polyamorous desires as well, since those are on either side of open on the traditional spectrum. Being solid in one style of relationships now doesn't mean you won't change in the future. Oftentimes, people shift into a new way of relating depending on their own growth, personal development, time, building trust with their partner, age, and sexual desires. We recommend taking this quiz every so often to check in as you grow.
Amen to that.
I think it's interesting because there's some questions that are more like philosophically.
Yeah.
Like, this is what I think about marriage in general.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which can also not necessarily be like reflected like in reality.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, marriage is a construct and yet we are married.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, and I presumably we congratulate our friends when they get engaged to be married.
Oh yeah,
and
totally.
Things like that,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Even though we all know it's...
Even though it's dumb.
It's a dumb thing to do. Well, that was cool. I have one other thing I just wanted to read to you because it showed up, unless you have anything else you want to say about that.
No.
We're going to throw to the episode soon. We haven't really been doing these intros over the summer as much, these foreplays, let's say. But we wanted to
just to kick things off back, yeah, get back into the swing of, you know, I guess you could call it season four.
We miss you. We were sure you must miss us.
You gotta.
Yeah.
You must. Gotta.
What are your lives like without listening to us every, yeah, week? But this, I just thought this was cute because it showed up in my promotions of my inbox, yeah, my Gmail inbox. And, I continue to like read about my menstrual cycle and the best way to support myself in these things. But so one of these promotional emails came in from Thinks.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the period underwear folks. Yeah, yeah. And it had I clicked on it. I don't usually click on anything in there. Period euphemisms from around the world. So this is how people refer to periods in different parts of the world. I think you're going to like some of these, Jeremy. So We've all heard Shark Week and Aunt Flo is in town.
But Shark Week, never heard of that.
Shut up.
No, I never. So what? Shark Week, yeah, Shark Week. I mean, I'm familiar with Shark Week, the Discovery Channel week that covers only shark content.
Yeah, no.
But I've never heard someone refer to their period as Shark Week. That's fucking hilarious.
It's great, right? Here's a few others. The Red Army. Languages, that's in the Russian language. The Painters are in. Granny's Stuck in Traffic. That's South Africa. From the Italian language, I have a flood. From the German language.
My basement is flooded.
From the German language, Strawberry Week. From the Danish language, there are communists in the funhouse.
Oh my God, Jesus Christ.
From Turkey, the motherland is bleeding.
Oh wow, okay.
From Puerto Rico, the rooster sang to you yesterday. I feel like that one's just made up and thrown in there. Satan's Waterfall, that comes from the English language.
That's a good one.
Russian, defrosting the steak. Love that. That's a very visual one. Yes. Blood Festival, that's from the Japanese, of course. Mm-hmm. They make a lot of really great horror movies, don't they? Or we're thinking more.
Japanese has some good horror. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. They're.
Blood Festival sounds right. Okay. Romania, Santa Claus has come.
Aw.
The Netherlands, the red Ferrari is here.
Okay.
Hungary, monthly oil change.
Oh.
And Finnish, the day of pushing flowers. Oh, and then also Japanese, arrival of Matthew Perry. I found this really funny because I love Matthew Perry. But it goes on to describe, it was important to me to figure out what Chandler from Friends did to earn this. So I looked up the origin for this one. Turns out I'm a bad history student. The Matthew Perry in question is actually the Commodore of the U.S. Navy who forced Japan into opening trading with the U.S. in 1853.
Oh, yeah. That was a big piece of Japan. That's Japan, because Japan was like closed off to the whole world.
No trading?
No trading. I mean, they're one of the only, I think it's like other, like outside of like maybe three or four other countries that just like fully denied the option of colonialism. Like they were like, we don't give a fuck about the rest of the world. But eventually they, you know, the trade thing, it was kind of necessary. I'm not a history student. I could be wrong about this, but I'm pretty sure it was pretty necessary for them to like kind of make the next step to
growth
and like advanced civilization. But
and don't is
Matthew Perry interesting?
Yeah. So
hey, don't chew that.
So So it was extremely disruptive to Japanese society. So arrival of Matthew Perry is
that's funny.
Yeah. It's pretty cute. I like Shark Week. I'll probably keep saying
that. Shark Week's good. I like that.
I like saying I'm like I'm trying to figure out how to, because I don't like I'm menstruating. I just feel like a lot of the menstrual cycle, like so much of women's health, has been medicalized.
Yeah.
So, and I don't like it. So I like to just say
my pussy's bleeding.
No.
Just say that.
No, I don't like that. I'm bleeding.
My hoo-ha's got a bunch of blood coming out of it.
I'm hemorrhaging.
Yeah.
No, I don't. Anyway, maybe Shark Week though.
Shark
now,
good.
Now you'll know. Now you'll giggle every time someone says Shark
Week. Yeah, we should change the name of the aisles in like Loblaws to Shark Week aisle.
Oh.
You know?
I like that. Well, that's all I have to talk to you about this week, baby.
Well, then, folks, that means it's time. Let's throw to our conversation with Jessica Esfandiari. such a regal name. We hope you enjoy this conversation. Again, Jessica is the host of Open Late, which is a deep dive into all things relationships, much like this podcast. You can find Open Late anywhere you get your podcasts. And and why don't you just hop on over to Open Late's website and get more info if you're interested in more. We hope you enjoy this episode, and we will be back next week with a new recording. Looking forward to it. In the meantime, if you want to support the podcast, just leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts, or leave a rating on the Spotify mobile app, or come join us on Discord. And by Discord, I mean Patreon. Mixing up two podcasts here. Turn Me On Podcast, patreon.com/turnmeon. You can come be a patron. And
you can watch our interviews, just so you know, our guests, if you want to get a look at their faces while they're talking, you can see their sweet faces talking right on
on Patreon. Enjoy this conversation, folks, and we will see you on the other side. All right, let's do this. We're sitting down with Jessica Esfandiari, the host of Open Late podcast, just freshly back from a dusty old trip down to Burning Man. I'm very jealous, I gotta say. I'm not one for bucket lists. I think bucket lists are kind of silly. But if I did have a bucket list, Burning Man would be on there. You know, that's one thing that I've always wanted to do. But alas, I think it's not something that will ever be really possible for me for medical reasons. All that alkaline dust really fucked my lungs up.
Oh yeah, Jeremy's got CF.
Yeah, I got a chronic lung disease, so it's just kind of like. But I always say I could always just drop acid at my house and my living room, and you take enough, you might as well be at Burning Man.
My friend James
in your living room.
Remember Esme's boyfriend, yeah. Ex-boyfriend James. He said, "I'm always at Burning Man in my mind."
Wow.
Yeah,
I love that. Good for him. Yeah. Jeremy, I'm so glad you were not there this year. This would not have been a good year for you.
I heard it was bad. Yeah.
It was so bad. There was so much dust. The dust storms were aplenty, and it made the acid not something you want to do so much it's like, if you want to talk about set and setting, it was not the setting.
Really?
It was rough. It was a rough year.
Seems like it would have been a bit of a fever dream, kind of just like, where the fuck am I? What's going on? Overwhelming, to say the least.
Yeah. Which I guess having, because I've been a bunch. So going through those dust storms myself was like not that serious. Although when they kept coming like day after day, I was like, even I got a little bit like, this can't keep happening. But for everyone that was with me in my camp, who it was like their first time, like it was my sister-in-law's first time, my best friend, I had a couple people who were like complete virgins. And so I imagine, and seeing it through their eyes, it was one of the most overwhelming things because they have no point of reference. Like, I've been there before. I know that they go away after an hour. You know, you're not going to be like sitting there. But at one point we were for like 3 hours and I was like, thank God I'm not high right now.
Yeah.
Like I couldn't imagine being, you know, really like out of my mind and then not feeling like unsafe in my environment. Mm.
Do you have to be inside during those dust storms?
No,
not a lot of options for inside.
Well,
really,
you built it. We were talking about building a camp. I have no scope of what is there.
Well, it's such a good question. If you can be inside, you should. But for many people, it's like not even an option.
Yeah.
Or their only inside is their tent. Mm-hmm. And they're likely not anywhere near their tent, you know, because it's like you go there to sleep and change maybe. Mm-hmm. In my camp, people are like, oh, your camp is bougie. I think we're just like really smart and we've had enough money to sort of invest and then, you know, attempt to recoup because we bought these shipping containers.
Oh, yeah.
And then we've like retrofitted them into like living quarters. So each container has four different rooms and each room has like, each room can sleep four and has a little fridge and an air conditioner. Wow. So it's like really nice by Burning Man standards. And we have like 100 people who camp that way. And then we get like a bathroom and shower trailer delivered. So we all share, like 100 people share like 3 bathroom stalls and like 3 shower stalls. And
holy,
so it's like nice. It's cushy. Yeah. But, you know, the couple times there were dust storms, it was nowhere near my camp. I was like a 25-minute bike ride from home. And you're like in the middle of nowhere in the desert. And it's just a complete whiteout. And you're being like the dust is like hitting you like the side of your face because it's the winds were like, I mean, at one point, I think I was outside at night in like 30-mile-an-hour winds.
Oh,
and it
my
lasted
goodness.
For like 2 hours.
Yeah.
So we were like, are we going to die?
Yeah. So I mean,
you have this like mask on. You have like an N95 or, you know, whatever kind of mask. And if you don't have that, then you're kind of in danger because you can really it can fuck with your lungs for a long time.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, to the point of, and not, I know that not everyone that goes to Burning Man is out of their mind on drugs, but, psychedelics are, you know, there's definitely a crew of people that, like to partake in psychedelics as Burning Man can be such a transformative experience for folks. And when you blend two transformative experiences together, it gets extra transformative. But, you know, to be in the middle of a dust storm on psychedelics would be a lot, but there's something to be said for a really challenging psychedelic experience. You know, I feel like a lot of folks, although it doesn't sound fun, I think for a lot of people that experience, you do come out on the other end with a new kind of lease on something, which oftentimes ends up being like, you know, worth the adventure, if you want to use that, mm-hmm. that word to kind of soften the blow. But yeah, sounds like it was a lot.
Yeah, I can agree with that. I think if you have like a really strong quality of mind, mm-hmm. and you can look at a really tough or dark, you know, or just challenging journey or trip as like, okay, made it through that, I'm really strong. Like if that can be your takeaway, mm-hmm. then you're in a really good spot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which I've had some of those and I don't want to repeat them, but I'm glad yeah. they happened. Yeah.
That's right. Jessica, give our listeners a little insight into who you are and what's Open Late all about. Give us a bit of insight into Jessica's life.
Yeah. So other than going to Burning Man every year for weeks at a time, like building something from scratch, I am very much a community builder. I've been a coach and a facilitator of everything from, you know, life coaching programs to women's retreats, for a while now. And it was like in my work in that way that I started to realize people's relationships really needed healing. And just like people's relationship to the way that they have relationships, also was something that I just saw popping up in my work all the time that needed attention. Meanwhile, I've been in an open marriage with my husband for almost 9 years now. And I was very secret. It was a secret. I was very private about it for years and years, mainly because of my own shame or sort of like internalized misogyny or like, this is too taboo. I don't want anyone to know. I was very much in this, like, I need to protect this part of my life that I really like and no one will understand it. So I kept it in a box. And about 3 years ago, I had this like sort of aha. I was coaching in a program with like 60 participants and the theme all weekend was, you know, infidelity or feeling like a terrible person because they just had thoughts about someone else while in a committed relationship. And all of these things kept popping up and I just saw like how much pain people were in. And I felt like almost like I had this like secret sauce, but I wasn't sharing it. And, you know, I knew it's never going to be for everyone, but it had me feeling like, okay, wow, this is so much bigger than my little embarrassment that I might suffer, by like coming out about this. And so I started to, and it's funny, I gave my first talk at Burning Man in 2019. Our camp has a space, it's called an epicenter, and we host facilitators who give talks or workshops. I mean, everything from like sound healings to shibari rope tying to like talks on life insurance, just like whatever, it's there. And so it's I gave a talk.
Broad range.
Yeah. So I can
show up on acid for how to do your taxes 101.
Right. Exactly. So yeah. So I gave a talk on. And I was joking with you guys earlier, like, I'm not the person who's like the five things about non-monogamy, but actually I was. I was so nervous. I'm like, how do I even share this? So I came up with like the four pillars of my open relationship. And my husband and I sort of gave this talk together and a Q&A to follow. And it was so well received and people sort of came to me after, not only at Burning Man, but once I got home with questions and I ended up coaching couples and singles about it. And it became like a huge part of my life just from this one, you know, opening up in this space. It was very safe. Like a couple of my camp mates knew and other ones already like were open. So it was like this easy thing to do. It was like a nice stepping stone. And then after that, it just became a big part of my life. And I started going live on Instagram talking about it during the pandemic. And then last year in October, I launched my own podcast. And that's what Openly is all about. We talk about relationships in general, but mm-hmm. through my lens of non-monogamy, and the guests that I have on are all, for the most part, very sex positive and interested in these types of topics, whether it's monogamy or non-monogamy. It's really just like how to design a relationship that actually is unique to me and my partner and fits us rather than look at like this binary thing that we're born into. So that's where I am now. I never imagined that this would be like what I'm up to, but here we are.
So out in the open now. Mm-hmm. Would you say like most people in your life, all your family, your friends, everybody's kind of aware now?
Everybody knows. Yeah. And I came out to my parents like in person, you know, one-on-one. And at that point too, it was like right around the time that I started an intimate relationship. Well, my husband Pasha and I both with a woman for the first time. We had always like had kind of external relationships, but they were more casual or just like intimate but sexual, never really bringing someone in to our marriage that we were like in love with. And Lauren was different. So when that happened, kind of around the same time, I was like, well, I can't hide this. You know, my parents are going to come visit me. They live in Philly. They come to California a couple times a year. So I ended up coming out to them. And then, of course, with the podcast, I mean, everybody knows.
Did you live with Lauren?
So we've never lived together, but she lives less than a mile from our house. And she's here a couple days a week.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So maybe we can jump into the evolution of your open relationship, if you're willing to get personal with us, because I know that Jeremy and I have opened up our marriage. I have even no idea, like 7 years ago, 2015,
yeah, somewhere around there. Yeah.
2015. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We talked about it for 4 or 5 years prior to that. Makes us seem like we've been together for 20 years or something, but basically.
Hey, we're getting there.
but I really liked before we started recording what you said about how everybody's kind of experience with it or plays out uniquely. And as you said, you know, embracing non-monogamy in your own relationships gives you a chance to sort of customize that relationship to who you are and what you need and your partners as well, but just maybe a little bit more truthful, a little more honest. Yeah. How did you find yourself 9 years into an open marriage?
Yeah, well, it's really funny. Our very first experience was a total accident. We had an accidental threesome, and I call it, my husband loves to say that he masterminded it, but there's no way. Like, he's just like, he's like, no, I planned this. We were out one night. We ended up bringing home a girlfriend of mine. We had only been together for like 6 months at that point. And we weren't even married yet. And it went so well. And it was something that I think I had always known that I was attracted to women, but I didn't have the sexual confidence to really act on it. Mm-hmm. And I think for Pasha, sure, you know, like most, you know, cisgender heterosexual men in our society are like threesome, two girls, you know, that's just kind of the low hanging fruit. At the time we were both like, wow, okay, that was amazing. Did you like it? You know, we talked about it the next morning. Is that something you'd want to do again? And for me, it opened up this entire world of like, I've wanted to do that for a long time, even with that friend, like that friend and I had chemistry, we had worked together. And so we sort of carried on with her for about a year, but it opened us up. And when we first started our relationship, we had both come from like pretty shitty, toxic previous relationships. And we were also young, you know, we were in our mid to late 20s. So I think we both wanted something different. And we entered in with like, I want to be able to tell you everything. So it was always our practice to share what was on our mind. And we were both kind of in a lot of personal development work at the time. Like, we were just like fresh new babies, like, let's create something special and magical. But we really did. And we constantly leaned into things that felt edgy, but that we can like create safety around. So we like we started seeing other people, we started going on apps, you know, and we opened up slowly over the course of like 3 years. At first it was like, we're going to do things together. They're going to be talked about and planned, and then we'll dissect them after, you know, and it wasn't so clinical. It was really fun, but we were pretty careful to go slow. And then at about the 2 or 3 year mark, we started seeing people separately and individually, where like if someone was on vacation, we would, or even just like going on an app and meeting somebody and starting to like go on dates separately. And then that evolved into, as I shared earlier, around the 5 year mark, meeting Lauren. And that was just totally different. I don't think either of us really understood what polyamory was or what it really meant until then. I mean, and in all of that, like different seasons, I love to call it seasons, we closed our relationship at times when things got rough or we felt like maybe our foundation needed more work or just our relationship needed more attention, or we'd reopen. And a lot of times, I mean, we've closed our relationship maybe 3 times over the course of 9 years. Twice had nothing to do with being open. Mm-hmm. We were just like, we're spreading our energy out too thin. And we're kind of having like a root relationship problem right now that we should focus on rather than go on this vacation with this guy, you know? Yeah, we've kind of run the gamut, everything from monogamish and telling each other everything to now we're very open and fluid, and we still have the practice of like we share everything. We don't keep secrets. We never have. But now it's like I don't need to know, you know, everything. Like he'll be like, do you want to know the details? And if I'm in the right mood, I'm like, yeah, tell me everything. But generally, like our lives are exactly as they are, and we've built this super strong foundation. So now it's very much like, you know, everyone's on the same page all the time. And, you know, we have different partners and our partners meet each other. And we're kind of working on building community in LA around this. So that's the whole like almost decade of it.
Turn Me On Podcast. We'll be back after this short break.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes. Nice
dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about UnitedHealthcare coverage at UH1.com. That's UH1.com.
I really appreciate that you included in that the parts where there were times where you guys decided to like close things off and focus on the foundation that needed a bit of work. And I think for a lot of people who maybe don't really consider themselves non-monogamous or the idea of it really freaks them out or scares them, or you know, maybe they're kind of interested, but like they just don't really know where to start. I think that's one of the things, one of the pieces that people don't really think about. You know, it's like it's all or nothing.
Right.
You're either fucking full floodgates open or there's nothing else and it's just pure monogamy. And it's a nice reminder for people to hear that, like, no, this thing is ever evolving. It's always changing. It's always, you know, it doesn't, just because you call yourself one thing doesn't mean that you are no longer ever going to be that other thing again. You know, it's nice to know that that when dealing with something like non-monogamy, that can look however the fuck you want it to look. And mm-hmm. it can be different from one year to the next. And yeah. There's nothing tying you to anything, you know, permanent. It has the ability to shift and evolve just in the same ways that your relationship with your partner will inevitably shift and evolve and change. And so, like, with non-monogamy, you have the ability to move with that change. You're not locked into this one thing. I think that's one thing that people just get, like, freaked out about when they hear about non-monogamy. They're like, oh, fuck, no, I couldn't.
Yeah.
I couldn't ever get locked into that contract, you know?
I always say, like, it should be a seasonal menu all the time, your relationship, no matter if you're monogamous or not, or even dating, like, because we're so different all the time based on our experiences and how we change and evolve and grow. It's like, if your relationship is a set menu and it never changes, that's just kind of a recipe for getting into a rut, in my opinion. So even in our, like, non-monogamy, when things are really great, I like to step back and think, like, where can we focus more on each other and just, like, switch it up.
Yeah. One thing that I'm kind of curious about, and mostly just because it's fun to, like, hearing your story, there was a number of things that came out that I was like, oh, that sounds very, very familiar. It sounds very similar to the experience that Bridie and I have had. And I know that when we started doing this podcast, that experience was quite eye-opening. I feel like I've learned quite a bit over the last, like 6 years now of doing the show. And so I'm kind of curious about asking you what it is that you've kind of learned, or things that have, like, kind of surprised you in the conversations that you've had doing Open Late. Since you started the podcast, you know, it seems that your show is similar in that it's, you know, conversations with other people and kind of opening up the floor for conversation surrounding things like relationships similar to us. So is there anything, you know, over the span of the lifetime of the podcast so far, that's kind of been like a light bulb moment, or things that have really kind of stuck out for you that you've learned through the process?
Such a good question. Yeah. And I sense so many similarities in our relationships, which I think is one of the reasons that after listening to a few of your shows, I was, like, drawn to it too. Mm-hmm. I think for me, the cool thing has been, maybe not a light bulb, but this is the first thing I thought of, is it's brought me to meet a lot of people in this community that I would never have met otherwise. And people reaching out and being like, yeah, me too. So that's been really cool because I'm new to being open. I mean, even though I guess it's been 3 years now, it's been kind of like a couple pandemic years. So it's like, I don't know how to measure those.
She's just going through her pandemic life crisis.
I mean, fuck, time. The pandemic time
she'll
is
grow,
like,
out of it.
I'm in a goddamn time warp. I have no fucking clue how long it's been since.
It's weird.
The world's been normal. Yeah.
Yeah. So I feel like I don't even know how to measure that time, but it feels very young that I've been open. And so no one knew. And so I wouldn't connect with people other than in, like, mostly, like, romantic experiences, which were limited because, you know, let me let the cat out of the bag. Just because you're non-monogamous does not mean you're hooking up with everybody. In fact, like, there have been so many dry spells, as I'm sure you guys have spoken to. Like, it's never about the sex, you know? I think I went, like, once, like, a year and a half without even, like, kissing another human other than, you know, my husband. So that's been like, the light bulb has been, oh, there are so many of us. There are so many of us, which I knew before. But And this kind of will lend into these other little ahas. So many people have been doing this successfully for such a long time in secrecy. I can't tell you, and maybe you guys have the same thing, but how many people write into me that are like, my husband and I have been in an open relationship for 14 years. No one knows. I love your podcast because it almost makes me feel like this freedom of speech thing that I can never have, right? I resonate with it because of this. So the overwhelming amount of people that I've found who are living this life in private really goes to show that I'm not just this like outlier person, and that there are so many people hungry for something different and who have beautiful, loving relationships with like multiple partners. It's so inspiring. And in some ways it makes me feel like, wow, I've got a lot of work to do. Mm-hmm. Like if I have the safety and the confidence and the privilege, right, to speak out about this and to like be open and share my relationship without fear of, you know, of course there's like public judgment, but like I'm safe. No one's going to harm me because I'm like, oh, I have sex with men that aren't my husband, which is not the case for a lot of women. So I feel like, oh crap, I have a lot to do now. Like it sort of, it's exciting for me because I feel like there's a lot of room to make change in people's perceptions. So that's been really fun. And the other little like light bulb, well, there's two things that I want to share. We talked about this earlier. One, how like half the world's practicing non-monogamy. They just don't want to admit it.
Right.
They call it cheating. They call it a mistake. And the other is like how many of my monogamous friends and community and family are now all like, how do we dip our toes in? Mm-hmm. You know, and I'm like, did I make it look that cool? Or people just need somebody who they can resonate with talking about it. And so it's cool to be that activator because I have friends that I never imagined would consider trying anything like outside of monogamy and their marriage who were like, maybe we'll just go to this play party with you. And I'm like, okay, cool. So I think it's been an interesting year. There've been a lot of cool ahas and things that have like helped me feel really, I don't know the word, like I'm very galvanized by this. Whereas 3 years ago, you would catch me like hiding out about it. I would like delete my profile all the time off of like dating apps because I didn't want anybody to find out. Yeah, and then I would like go back to it. So, yeah.
Go ahead.
What do you think the biggest challenges are? I mean, or like from what you've heard from the conversations you've facilitated on your podcast and beyond, like because people always think, well, the jealousy, it's gotta be crazy. But by all accounts, you know, scheduling is a huge challenge. For me personally, things that I didn't anticipate to be challenging are like also allowing the relationship with Jeremy to evolve. Like, sure, like go out and do that and have those relationships and wake up that part of you and so on. But also simultaneously allowing our relationship to evolve alongside of that, I would say was like sort of an unexpected challenge. You know, there's definitely been moments and times where I've been like, but I didn't want our relationship to change. I wanted to have these things, but I still want the same quality of closeness, let's say. But also that closeness changes and evolves. Mm-hmm. And sometimes like change is very hard for human beings. So I'm just wondering if there's anything else you've heard from your conversations that you're like, people want to dip their toes in, but something unexpected that they don't realize might be that blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. I mean, that's a really beautiful point that you make because, and I just, for clarity, do you two still live together or you don't live together anymore?
No, we don't. No,
I thought so. Mm-hmm. I imagine, because I think that's something that Pasha and I, have like maybe that's maybe even been edgy for us. Just hearing you say it is like piquing my thoughts of like, wow, have we tried to keep our relationship the same? And it has evolved in ways, but I think that's a really scary thing for people that they might not foresee in the very beginning of like letting this breathe and letting this evolve and change into something totally different that doesn't look the way it does right now. In our case, and this isn't answering your question, but I'm just like going to talk through this because I'm thinking about it. We've a lot of times, like our external relationships bring us back to our own romance. And sometimes like it's like this jolt of energy that's like really special, which I'm, maybe you guys have the same experiences for the most part. And we haven't really like run out of that yet, which is nice. But I have had, I've wondered, I've been like, is this ever going to stop being like this little reset button that I love for our relationship? I mean, and who knows, right? We're about to have children. So that's like a whole other new chapter that we'll go down together, and we'll probably be more co-parents than anything for a while. But to your question, what I think most people that I do have conversations with that are in the throes of maybe they're just open or they've been open for a while or polyamorous is the amount of personal work that you have to do to be good at this. It's like the misconception is like, oh, well, I could never do it. I'm too jealous of a person. And it's like, do you think that people who are in non-monogamy, like or non-monogamous relationships aren't jealous, or that people who are like actively polyamorous don't experience jealousy? Like, of course they do. It's just this choice that I'm actually going to use my vehicle or use my relationship as a vehicle for growth. And so I want to look at this stuff head on. And I think people are, they see jealousy as like so one-dimensional because that's everyone's like biggest fear. And they're like, well, once I get over that, it'll be so easy. It's like, no. It's like, A, it's probably not even that. That's your trigger. First, you need to identify, because like you can't blanket jealousy over every uncomfortable emotion, right? There's, you know, the fear of abandonment. There's rejection. There's the feeling of not enough, right? That lack of like internal self-esteem or confidence. Like those are all very different. And so I think that people just don't understand the amount of like excavating that they're going to be signing up for. Then the like compound of that is it's not just your relationship now with your partner. That's always the most, like that's the incubator for where you can do the most work on your sort of inner child healing. I'm just reiterating my therapy session this morning, by the way. It's literally what we talked about.
It's so great because I was going to be like, are you in therapy? Have you been in therapy?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I've been for like a year and a half. But and also just like being a coach, you like learn a lot about this type of stuff. Mm-hmm. Not that a coach is ever a replacement for therapy because it's very different things. But now you have multiple mirrors. Like you have your own partnership, maybe like for me, I can speak to having a primary partnership and others. And that's, you know, I think what your experience is like as well. Or correct me if I'm wrong, but we have that. And now I have like this woman that I'm in love with who has triggered me on many different levels. It's helped me heal my mother wound and my sister wound. And then I have like this other guy that I've had, you know, relationship with that is triggering a different part of like my teenage self that my husband never really pressed on that button before. So it's like, you're going to be caused to do so much more personal growth than you. It's like an accelerator. So yeah, like if you want more self-awareness than ever before, or to feel really, you know, raw and like broken at times, this is what's for you. Sign up for non-monogamy.
Sounds like therapy. I mean, sounds just like therapy.
I remember in grade 12 taking a class. It was an elective and it was known as the Bird course. It was called personal development. And I know it, like when I think back on that, I'm like, oh my God, I've been on this track my whole life. Like I'm just like always, I've always been in it for that sort of self-actualization opportunity.
Maybe there's someone listening right now. Well, maybe I would say there's very high chance someone's listening right now who, you know, is like thought about the non-monogamy thing, but doesn't really know where to go. Like nobody in their life is actually doing it. And so it's like, it's one thing to listen to a podcast, but it's something completely different to like actually start talking about this in my own life. I know that there was like there's a sort of quiz, Bridie, that you were talking about that Jessica you've put together that sort of is like meant to, and correct me if I'm wrong, but like meant to get people thinking about whether or not non-monogamy might be for them.
Yeah, so that's like one reason to take it, and the other is if you're interested in non-monogamy and you're like, fuck, it's overwhelming. I don't know what thing am I? Like, do I want to be open? Am I polyamorous? I think there's a lot of confusion about like what the different terms mean. Like a lot of people mentioned this earlier. Like a lot of people are like, I could never be in an open relationship. But they could certainly have, you know, like curated threesomes probably with their partner that could be very fulfilling twice a year, you know, and not that's like monogamous, you know,
not a difficult menu item to order, really. I mean, you got to find that right person.
Well, I mean,
you do.
I think it's a little bit more difficult for some that would just judging on the amount of emails that I have received personally, and not let alone what the podcast has received about people saying, how in the fuck do I get a threesome going?
There's
more literally or less books written about how to do it.
I more or less meant like from the perspective of one partner to another partner.
Yeah.
It's not the hardest
no,
sell.
No.
You know?
Right.
It's like, it's kind of there on everybody. Not everybody, but you know, everybody's.
A lot of.
Well, and it's the thing that might not like rock the foundation.
Totally.
Like,
sure.
Someone's not ready to like, you know, unzip and pour, you know, out their chest cavity, right? A threesome is something that most people could do on a vacation or for a birthday or like hire. Like, you know, I always recommend to people because it is challenging to find the right person and then to also care for that person as like a third in the experience, which a lot of couples overlook when they're just starting out. I'm always like, hire a tantric body worker.
Yeah,
like,
totally.
It's literally their job.
They
give you an orgasm and they're like, is there anything else I can do for you?
Yeah.
And
then you could not be more supported in that experience than with a professional. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I think that the quiz is really cool because it can kind of point you in a direction and it kind of can help maybe alleviate some fears that people have, right? Because we're creating the story in our head before we do something of like all the reasons why not. The quiz can kind of say, listen, this is a good starting point for you. And it can validate you. Like I think I've always been a polyamorous person and I never realized it. Mm-hmm. And so I built it with the intention for people to feel like, okay, cool. I kind of feel seen and heard with my response. It's limited in the way that, and if anyone's listening and knows of a quiz maker where I can have like a runner up, I really wish that I could have that with this platform, but it'll give you the thing that essentially your responses came back the most. But I would love it if it was also like, but you also had 6 responses for this one. So people could see like, I'm monogamous with a tendency towards, you know, open, or, you know, I'm monogamous with a tendency towards monogamy, so that you could feel into like what your little wing is. That would be cool. Mm. It doesn't have that for right now.
This is a call out, tech heads.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
For that.
Yeah, all of our venture capitalists out there.
Let's do this quiz as an intro to this episode.
That'd be great. Yeah, that'd be great. Can you give me a little flavor?
Well, the first question.
Yeah,
I don't want to go through the whole thing.
I'm just curious.
It's obviously clearly very thoughtfully worded and I don't want to speed through it. But the first question is, you would describe your dating history as, and there's 5 options. A, dating a few people at once. However, once you fall for someone, you'll switch gears and focus on your emotional relationship with them. B, usually dating with the intention to be with one person. Occasionally, when you're not exclusive, you'll hook up with others. C, one at a time for considerable stretches of time. Sounds like serial monogamy.
Yeah.
D, you've never seen the point in labeling the people you connect with, since traditional dating to marry and to have a family isn't your plan. Or E, you have been able to have feelings for more than one person at once. It's nuanced.
Yeah.
Which I really
there's,
like.
There's like definitely good options in there. It's not very
doesn't pigeonhole you into I love to fuck as many people as I can.
Big old sloot.
Yeah. Seriously. Yeah. I should make an alt version of this because it's funny. We had a lot of fun doing it. We had a lot of those like where I had to like cross it off and like, I can't do that. But yeah.
That would be fun. Yeah. We'll do it as an intro, a foreplay to this episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That'd be very fun. Jessica, this has been really fun. How can people find the podcast? How can people stay up to date with what you're up to? You know, you're a very interesting person. So I feel like people listening would love to kind of keep up with all things Jessica and all things Open Late.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it. I mean, the best way to connect with me is probably Instagram for the moment. And I'm the person who answers and responds to like all the DMs and everything. So it's Open Late the podcast. And I would definitely join. There's a little link to join the newsletter because I'm actually just about to start blogging about more of my intimate experiences, like more of my personal life. The podcast is a bit curated and I have guests. But that would be a cool way to get to know me better. And people have been asking for it. So we can do that. And then my personal Instagram is journey.with.jessica. And I do a lot of fun, interesting stuff there too. There's a lot of overlap, but that's where you can find more things about coaching and healing and different modalities that I practice.
Sweet.
So yeah, we're at Burning Man. So
yeah
next sweet. Year. Yeah. 2023.
Well, Jessica, thank you. Thanks for taking time out of your schedule to sit down and shoot the shit with us. This has been very fun and looking forward to kind of deep diving into Open Late. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you both. I appreciate you having me on the show and look forward to getting to know you both better too. I want to come visit.
Yeah, come up. It's pretty rad. I'm actually coming down. I'm going to be in LA in a couple of weeks.
For a different desert festival.
I'm not technically going to be in LA for long. I'm going to Desert Days in on Lake Paris, just like outside of San Bernardino, I think. Somewhere around there. Yeah. So looking forward to that.
I have friends that go to that. Very cool.
Can't wait. I'm big fan of a lot of the people playing there. So it's gonna be a fun time.
You're a hippie.
Oh, fuck yeah. Are you kidding me?
I know.
I'm on acid right now.
That's real.
All right. See you, Jessica. Thank you. All right. There we have it, folks. Hope you enjoyed that conversation that we just had. And thanks for listening to the podcast. If you want to support the podcast further, you can do that by leaving a rating or a review on Apple Podcasts, or you can simply rate the podcast on the Spotify mobile app. And if you want to support the podcast even further than that, which you can.
Wow.
You can go to
so kind and thoughtful and so generous. Thoughtful,
so generous. Go to patreon.com/turnmeon. To become a patron and help us keep this podcast afloat.
Well, if you want to reach out to us, turnmeonpodcast@gmail.com is always open for all of your messages. That's the best way to get in touch. If you have a question for us, if you'd like to be a guest on the show, if you have a recommendation for a guest on the show, or if you just want to send us a little love note, email, money transfer, all of that.
Sex toy.
You know, our email inbox is open to you.
That is it for this week. Until next week.
Why don't you go touch yourself?
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more.
and is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.